Good morning, everyone, and welcome to ULT in Philadelphia. As is our custom, we will repeat again the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. And that is, the policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy, without professing attachment to any Theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among Theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis, and it aims to disseminate this idea among Theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as Theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true Theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. And as that which has been going on here in these rooms for many years is a program. As you see, Sunday morning, for an hour, from 11 till noon, there's either a talk or a discussion or a panel. This morning, April the 3rd, the Drama School and Pilgrimage Called Life. Another topic for the Sundays in April, spiritual knowledge. Now the doors open at 10:30, and as we see, we started at 11 and will be over by noon. During the course of the week, regular meeting on Wednesday evening here in these rooms that begin at 6:45 and it's over 6:45, over at 9. Because the doors open at 5:30 so that you can come into the library, take a look at our reading room. It's always a volunteer there to help you find a lesson for that particular evening and examine other literature. However, during library hours, before and after meetings, in the middle room you will find a book table, and on that book table you will find straight line Theosophical literature and a wealth of material to introduce you to the program. For instance, on the third Friday of the month, from 7 to 8, there's a special meeting, a discussion, something very interesting, and it takes up the subject of other philosophies and religions. April the 15th, 7 to 8, the topic will be Taoism, the quiet way. Now, there are several other meetings that take place during the course of the season, and we would like to bring your attention to one on April the 16th, which is a Saturday. Time, 1 to 3:30 p.m., and it's advisable that we get here at least a half an hour before the meeting begins. It's by and for and under the auspices of the Philadelphia ULT, What You Don't Know About Karma. Now, there's an Interlodge Symposium on Saturday, the May 14th, from 11 to 4:30 p.m. at Washington, D.C., ULT. You may make inquiries about that meeting at the book table. Those who have experienced it find it exciting, a lot of camaraderie, and the talk and discussion. New York Lodge, Washington, D.C. Lodge, Philadelphia Lodge, and other visitors. Very interesting. Now, in addition to this, we would advise newcomers to pick up the April, May, June flyer. It's available on the radiator at the door and at the book table. Man, the Eternal Pilgrim. A very interesting little pieces of paper, four sides, which you may keep in your pocket folded up just like this, and all during the week you can consult it and keep up with what's going on. Now, all the work here is carried on, as you see, by volunteers. And if you have been coming for a while and you're in accord with what goes on here, ask someone how to proceed if you wish to volunteer. Now, the reading this morning is taken from the Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 9, out of 18 chapters. And the topic is devotion by means of the kingly knowledge and the kingly mystery. And Krishna speaks, "Unto thee, who findeth no fault, I will now make known this most mysterious knowledge, coupled with a realization of it, which having known, thou shalt be delivered from evil. This is the royal knowledge, the royal mystery, the most excellent purifier, clearly comprehensible and not opposed to sacred law, easy to perform and inexhaustible. These who are unbelievers in this truth, O harasser of thy foes, find me not, but revolving in rebirth, return to this world, the mansion of death. All this universe is pervaded by me in my invisible form. All things exist in me, but I do not exist in them. Nor are all things in me. Behold, this my divine mystery, myself causing things to exist and supporting them all, but dwelling not in them. Understand that all things are in me, even as the mighty air, which passes everywhere, is in space. O son of Kunti, at the end of a kalpa, all things return unto my nature. And then again, at the beginning of another kalpa, I cause them to revolve or evolve again. Taking control of my own nature, I emanate again and again this whole assemblage of beings without their will by the power of the material essence. These acts do not bind me, O conqueror of wealth, because I am as one who sitteth indifferent, uninterested in those works. By reason of my supervision, nature produces the animate and inanimate universe. It is through this cause, O son of Kunti, that the universe revolves. The deluded despise me in human form, being unacquainted with my real nature as Lord of all things. They are of vain hope, deluded in action, in reason and in knowledge, inclining to demoniac and deceitful principles. But those great of soul, partaking of the godlike nature, knowing me to be the imperishable principle of all things, worship me, diverted to nothing else, fixed in an unbroken vows, they worship everywhere, proclaiming me and bowing down to me.
So the topic for our talk today is the drama, school, and pilgrimage called life. Now, this is the first in a series of talks for the month, the theme of which, all of them, will be spiritual knowledge. Spiritual knowledge. Well, and we start out with life. What is life? We all have life. Every being that exists everywhere expresses life. Well, since the theme for the month is spiritual knowledge, this morning we're going to investigate whether there's a relationship between spiritual knowledge and this thing that we call life. But, as was said in the reading, this most mysterious knowledge, or this spiritual knowledge, Krishna tells us, is reserved for him who findeth no fault. A conditioned precedent. Unto thee who findeth no fault, says Krishna, I will now make known this most mysterious knowledge, coupled with a realization of it, which, having known, thou shalt be delivered from evil. Well, think about that. I will now make known this most mysterious knowledge. So, there's something. If there's something to be made known, then there's some learning to do, isn't there? Coupled with a realization of it, which is for us to awaken to it within the actions of our own lives. We realize an idea when we make it real through the actions of our lives. And which, having known, thou shalt be delivered from evil. So then we're headed somewhere, aren't we, if we're being delivered? It seems then to correspond life to spiritual knowledge, there's something that needs to be learned. That which is learned must be acted out, and that which is learned and acted upon will bring us in and of itself to a certain path. Hence, we have our investigation into the drama, the school, and the pilgrimage that we call life. We're told that to apprehend just what life is, one has to understand his own true nature. And the expression, man, know thyself, comes to mind. What is our own true nature? If we view ourselves inwardly, our true nature, as one with and at the same time a ray of the omnipresent, the whole, the one, then we must accept that all which appears to be separate from us in form actually is at one with the whole also, and therefore in certain ways is part of us. Everything is part of the whole. Thus it follows then that every being is a vehicle or an expression of the one divine. When we observe ourselves in the sense of mind and body, when we just observe our own form and other forms of life around us, forms of every grade and degree which cycle through constant change of growth, we can conclude not only is the one within us, but that that mysterious one, within it lies the power to unfold according to the form that it is dwelling within, the power to evolve, and even in man, the power to elucidate. So it's possible then that each being may gain in time a full knowledge of life from within his own true self. This is if he is willing to satisfy the conditions precedent, unto thee who findeth no fault. And that takes work. Work that can only be carried out through our drama, in our school, and along our pilgrimage that we call life. So, life, the drama, school, and pilgrimage called life. Life as a drama is a story with characters, characters with whom we all interact. Each and every personality in that story is his own protagonist of his own story. We interact. We take on a certain role among our family, our friends. And while most people just try to get along day by day, yet others see that there's a larger aspect to life. Those who see that they have a duty, those who are awakened to a certain duty toward others in their lives. Now, each of us experiences certain challenges, certain conflicts, certain setbacks, each according to our own karma. Often, people tend to attribute these challenges to the other actors on the stage. However, when we see that our fellow thespians are really only allegories for what's going on in our own true nature, the conflict in our outer world is really just a symbol or a sign of the conflict that's going on within our own true nature. When we realize that, then we recognize that our internal strengths and weaknesses are merely portrayed by our friends and family. And the time to accept responsibility for those challenges within ourselves is now. So we have the opportunity to act in accordance with our own inner nature if we are conscious of the duty which all of nature demands. And it is said, he who does so thinks and acts in such a way that he raises up and transmutes all with whom he interacts. Now, life as a school is a world which, what, endlessly and cyclically provides us with all the lessons that we haven't learned yet. We are reborn time and time again, now the ruler, now the slave, today at the pinnacle of wealth and power, tomorrow at the bottom of the ladder. But internally, we are ever the same student. There are those who will circumscribe themselves in a given life with false ideas that they hold on to regarding life. But when one accepts that his entrance into this physical world is the result of his own actions, when he accepts that whatever merits or demerits come to him, he's prepared for himself, and that nothing is handed to him by the sins of his father, but rather because of his own past actions, he is beginning to fulfill that condition precedent. When we desire to learn and seek the good and the perfectness in the world, when we sense the truth and concentrate on it, without dwelling on minor inconsistencies, this is the attitude the true student takes in the school of life. So, we must set aside preconceptions and prejudices of false ideas that we've had in the past, and we have to dismiss these false ideas that we were raised with, false ideas such as a personal vengeful God, that we only live one life, that there is vicarious atonement, that other people can clean my slate. But unfortunately, in our world we live in, most of our social, religious, and political institutions are based on those false ideas. And hence, the student of life is going to have to stand out and be ye separate. So we've talked about life as a drama and as a school. Life as a pilgrimage is the experience. Regardless of the length of the journey, we grow because of the journey itself. To observe our world mindfully, thoughtfully, reflectively, serves to assimilate the highest substance of our experiences into our own character. Life as a pilgrimage is simply the procedure of soul development. Through our silent evolution, we relate to our character, our fellow characters on the stage. The effects of these relations we feel. And actually, all of the kingdoms on the earth interact in certain ways and are moving along this journey, all of the kingdoms, toward a greater and greater realization of the self. From the elemental to the human kingdom, all are sparks of the one spirit. All is spirit and soul, ever evolving under the rule of law inherent in the whole. All kingdoms of life have need for ever developing their instruments, evolving their instruments from within outward for a better instrument that they may have broader and broader contact with the outer world. Such is the great pilgrimage, with the very definite determination toward the end in view, which is the experience and the emancipation of the soul. Such is the course of evolution from within outwards, ever tending toward individuality, and then finally toward divinity. This procedure is the pilgrim's journey by way of self-induced means and self-devised methods, just as no one can live another person's life for him, so no one can confer spiritual knowledge upon another. It must be gained and learned by self-induced means, and self-devised methods. Yet, each and every spark of the mysterious one has the opportunity for this journey according to an ever-unfolding divine plan. So these are some ideas we present. Your contributions and questions are certainly welcome. Yes?
It sounds like the three states described, the illusion, the school, or the pilgrimage, are states of mind.
The drama, the school,
right,
and the pilgrimage.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the drama being, as was said, a play, an illusion for a specific time period, we can live our lives that way. We can get caught up and rooted in the illusion or the drama and stay there. We can realize there's something to learn and look at it as a school, or in a sacred way, turn this into a pilgrimage to help, as was said, all of life. So what is it, or how do we begin to achieve the state of mind which allows us to move through those stages until we realize it is a holy pilgrimage in a sense? What happens? What awakes us, or how do we reach for that?
So the question is, how do we get to that place where we recognize the sacredness of life for really what it is? You know, it's a great question, because we get involved in so much of what's going on. Don't we really have to start experiencing some real problems first before we start really looking for the answers? Don't we have to look for the answers and get the wrong answers a lot of times, only to find out that the time and the effort we put into it, really we're barking up the wrong tree? So it takes time and effort to search, right? And theosophy would tell us that if we could just stand back from, you know, be involved, be in it, but don't be of it, don't be attached to it. If we loosen our attachments to the struggles around us, then aren't we really raising our consciousness from our own personal stuff and desire to more mindfully observing what's going on? It's not to say don't still do what you need to do at work and with your family, but a big change happens when we step out of it and observe it. So that could be a good first step along the way. I see your hand popping up.
Quick follow-up. So when we begin this effort, does anything come along to help us? Are we assisted?
Are we assisted when with this effort? Well, steps toward spiritual evolution, if we're headed on a certain path, there's always going to be fellow pilgrims on that path with us, whether we realize it or not early on. And then we start comparing notes and contrasting experiences and realize, wow, there's a lot of folks, you know, just like me who are doing it. That doesn't mean that it's not still necessary to do the work independently, but the effort of a group of people who you might know are also on the path can help smooth things over along the way, it would seem. Yes.
But isn't that what's taking place here in these rooms, that we have all these books and literature that are aids for those who wish to know the truth? And the path is the truth of what reality truly is. So, you know, the aids are here, the help is here, but we have to go look for it, and really within ourselves we have to ask for help.
Thank you. So, it's written that if we find ourselves attracted to these ideas, if we have a strong affinity to ideas in this culture, that ideas that teach not of the personalized God, in this culture, ideas that teach of reincarnation and not one life to live, then it said really we're back, we're bringing these ideas back, and this is not the first time that we've been introduced to it, if we have this affinity. Here at the Lodge, we continue to pass on the traditions of the ancient wisdom religion from generation to generation, which was started really in this new cycle back in 1875. Yes?
To return to the previous question about what we can do to start on this path, the program began with that expression, he who findeth knows Paul. But there seem to be so many dimensions to that idea, because in some ways, finding fault or questioning or not being satisfied with what one's told is good for the search. But on the other hand, it gets in the way.
And so the question is?
What is it we have to not? What does it mean to not find fault?
Okay.
As a beginning step.
Right. So yeah. So if the beginning step is to not find fault, what are we saying? Really, it's more along the lines, perhaps, of not finding, not passing judgment on others. You know, and in this process, actually, Mr. Judge says also, not pass judgment on others, but also the first step is to make the decision to lead a virtuous life, to do the things that are necessary to be done simply because they are there to be done, without attachment to the results, right? And apparently, this sets up certain causes within our nature, the effects of which are going to be to bring about maybe either changes in our environment or changes within us so that we see our environment in a different way. The people around us who were co-workers and neighbors become teachers that we never even recognized in the past. Yes, Sahan?
But basically, is not finding fault separating ourselves? If we separate ourselves, we see the differences. We see the things that are wrong. So as soon as we find fault, we're separating ourselves from what the reality is, that whatever we're seeing is really within us, and we're passing judgment on the outside. When it's in the inside is where we need to find the clearing.
So when we find the fault, really, that fault finding is an outward expression of our own, which is why the virtuous person who has taken the steps, rather than finding the fault and passing the judgment, would probably well up compassion within himself, and rather than pass judgment, understand what's going on with another, that other does have problems, and lend a helping hand if he sees that it's his duty, it would seem. Yes?
Could you classify that maybe under the word objective discrimination as part of like meeting detachment? In other words, you could have a sense of truth and a sense of being involved to a certain level, and then look at other belief systems. And I think sometimes people's belief systems lead them to think and do whatever they think and do that we don't think it is representing the truth. But instead of having a fear-based reaction or a critical reaction, in other words, or an emotional reaction, towards whatever we see somebody else, how they think or what they do, we simply feel more objective or feel indifferent in a positive way, in a detached way.
Yes, we would agree with
because
that.
Because we have a higher sense of truth. But we have more of a sense of truth where we don't have to feel critical or fear or project out guilt toward what we see other people do that we don't think is the truth.
Certainly. So not only could we go ahead and take that position to detach ourselves from you know, okay, we can recognize that there's, say, a misinterpretation there, but we're encouraged as students of the philosophy, if one makes the effort to take this up as one's life work, a student of the philosophy will acquaint himself with the major religions of the world. And interestingly, it comes about that we can recognize certain issues in different religions and, using the same words, kind of elevate those words by dropping a few hints and a few ideas, by reading those words in their highest sense and sharing universal ideas with people of a dogmatic religion. You can help them see the same words in a much more grandiose or positive way. It's all a matter of making the effort, and it requires that you dig in and open the books and learn about all the different religions, and you find out how much theosophy really is in those religions, and how much really can be taught if the teachings are interpreted correctly. The very same teachings, yes.
We think it was brought out previously, but just to expand on it, Krishna says, whatever path taken by mankind, that path is mine. So how could that idea be applied to what just was said, to view the variety of devotional paths or paths towards truth that we see around us?
Whatever path is taken by mankind, that path is mine. Well, let's think about it. Ultimately, each religion in some way is an expression of man's search for union with God or with the whole. And if the expression is written or passed down orally over time, yeah, okay, things change, but that doesn't mean that the effort that people are putting forth is not a valid effort. So just by making the effort, even if the teachings are not as universal as others, let's just say, that's not to say that a devout student is not going to develop the character traits that's going to help him recognize the truth when he finally sees it. Spiritual knowledge in this particular life is not for everybody. If everybody had spiritual knowledge, then what? If those who are operating from a lower selfish base nature are going to take that power and abuse it. So it's only for those who prepare themselves, and those who do, it's really according to karma whether or not people who are in search of it, how much gold they mine, how many nuggets of gold that they get out of their mind. It's according to their karma and whether they've prepared themselves from it. Does that make sense? Okay. Really long-winded answer, but okay, yeah.
And then we're also thinking of the line we've heard in the philosophy that spiritual knowledge is the child of loving deeds. So it would also seem that no matter what the religious or philosophical path guiding the life, the loving deeds done from the heart with the right motive and intent sort of fit that pilgrim to be better able to receive and use that spiritual knowledge that was described. It's one of the steps in preparation, shall we say, and any one of us can do that at
sure.
any time.
Right. Agreed. And actually, we think the quote is, self-knowledge is of loving deeds, the child. But yet, as was said, that's all part of it. One has to understand, to be on the school of life, one has to understand who he really is, what his true nature is. And the way that we find out and come to understand it is through loving deeds to our fellow human beings. Yes?
Where does the idea of discrimination come in on this journey, on this path?
where does the idea of discrimination come in? Discrimination in the sense of understanding the and being able to prioritize and actually making the choice. Where does that come in? Well, it must come in for us to know the choice to make. It must come in, must be based on experience of some kind. That experience that comes to us through conscience, the little bird whispering in our ears, no, careful, don't do that, because you know what's going to happen, but choose that. Or, which is the result of cause and effect and making choices right and wrong and learning from them in past lives. Or intuition. Intuition is not conscience having learned logically and observed cause and effect, but rather the person who is able to put himself on this path in this school and be assisted by nature when the time is right, not every day, all day long, but flashes of intuition, which are flashes of direct perception of the truth of a matter, presents itself to the student along the way. Yes?
In other words, in a simplistic nutshell, the more you have...
Please do.
in other words, the more of a grasp you have on truth, I think that the better or more true you can perceive a person or yourself or a situation. So in that more of a grasp on truth by such places as a theosophical group or maybe some other spiritual group, you can observe the world around you or individuals in a detached way, but you can kind of understand, like you said before, have understanding of a person or maybe the way they think based on their background. Or you could kind of even analyze rather than judge and be critical or be angry in any given situation maybe that you're confronted with.
Thank you. So the contribution is those people who do the work to try to come to understand themselves better, come to understand others better. And, you know, we're told that's really the great work. He who is a Mahatma is a self-made Mahatma and has, so to speak, infinite capacity and capability to be of service to others, because he can understand right down into the inner nature and the kernel of our heart, knows what is good and right for us. Now, of course, we are told that they will help only in those certain circumstances where they would not interfere with our own karma. So what was just said by the contributor is along exactly the path that advanced adepts take, and they come to fully understand mankind and live fully in compassion. Yes?
Well, your topic was the Dharma school and pilgrimage called life. Life as a pilgrimage is, what is life then if it's a pilgrimage?
Well, if life is a pilgrimage, really what is it? Our understanding, if we're going to view life as a pilgrimage, is that really life is the process of evolving from within, without. And this pilgrimage doesn't just take place during a period of one life, but rather it's a continuous pilgrimage, because each one of us is a continually unfolding being. And so it's really the raising of the self by the self, which is the pilgrimage during life. But this work can only be done during life on earth, when we have these opportunities, these conflicts, the friction and the challenges, and the ability to set certain causes in motion. If we're not on, you know, if we don't do it here, it's not going to be done. That's our understanding, yes.
So might we say we are the seeker, and in the drama we seek the sense, the sensation of life. As a school, we seek the knowledge of life. And as a pilgrim, there's a difference there. We seek the heart learning, the wisdom, the sacred knowledge, and all of it allows us, as was said earlier, to act better in the moment, whether it's theosophy we're studying, or Christianity, or whatever system. If we are taking that in, and as the pilgrim seeking for the highest truth within it, and as was said from the chair, performing actions in that way, then we are definitely honoring that pilgrimage and that pilgrim.
Thank you. Broken down even more simply, the drama, the school, the pilgrimage of life. What's the drama? It's the acting, and it's the doing stuff. The school is the learning from the results of our actions, and the journey is based on what we did, and based on what we learned about what we did, is this moving us further along the path? A lot of times, you know, we can do a whole lot, but if we don't learn from it, are we really continuing the journey? Well, that in and of itself is part of the journey, as long as we learn from it, eventually. Yes. Wait, in the back. Yes, sir.
It says here, unto thee who findeth no fault. Now, it's our understanding that a fault means there's no crack, no break, no difference, or something to that effect, between what Arjuna has found out up until this point. And then Krishna speaks and then begins to say, he uses the pronoun, he says, all things exist in me. Well, that's a big question. If we pay attention to what he said, Krishna speaking. So we think that we have to begin first. Since we find no fault, we have to get the mystery of this pilgrimage of life. That means it's on a road somewhere or traveling. So how can we ourselves prepare ourselves to listen?
To what?
To listen.
Well, what do you think? Any contributions? How would we prepare ourselves to listen? Yes?
Practice.
Okay. Yes?
When he says about finding fault, it requires of the listener to have an open mind, to be receptive to what's being said, to not seek the fault in it, but to listen and to get all the information before you start passing judgment. That is what the pilgrim's obligation is, to listen with an open mind, with an open mind, open heart.
So the student who is on this pilgrimage, his obligation is to non-judgmentally maintain an open mind and an open heart so that he can learn from what's going on. Thank you. Right, because to find fault is to be dismissive of something, and how are you going to learn from it if you're not dismissive? Yes?
Well, just one comment, you know, how can you listen when you have to stop talking?
Thank you. How can you listen if you have to stop talking? Right, or to listen, you have to stop talking, yes.
Is life a principle? Because when we are born, that when we first enter this atmosphere, the physician cracks us on the back and we gasp for air. We breathe in the breath of life. But we are told that way before we enter this world, we are still alive. We are alive from conception on. So what is life then? Is life the air that we breathe, or is it the principle?
Right. Well, so the question is, in addition to it being the school, the drama, how would we view that from, you know, it actually being one of the seven constituents of our nature, the life principle, jiva? Any contributions on that? Yes?
I read someplace when they were talking about that, when it was describing issues of abortion, that actually our a baby's life starts, the soul is waiting to come into the body when the body of the baby it starts to leave the mother's womb, that that's when the soul first waits there and joins the body. So that's when life actually begins. It's just something I read and I gave it thought, because a lot of people get scared of the idea of abortion and say it's murder. That life is actually there in the womb, but physical life is, material life is, but not yet, the spirit has not yet entered.
Okay, yeah, and there's theosophical literature on that, and the idea posed by HPB is one which really says that gestations never even going to take place if there already isn't an ego there to cause it. Remember, it's not that we receive, it's not all about what do our parents do, but rather life and our vehicle, everything about our vehicle is the effect of previous lives. So conception is not even going to take place unless there's this magnetic presence of a human being minus the body ready to enter it, so to speak, enter it. But that really, before that conception happens, there is a human being fully human in every way except for the physical body. That's the teachings of theosophy.
In other words, the soul energy, the energy of their soul, or the energy of their spirit, it is awaiting around the actual physical.
Right.
In the womb.
The astral.
Everything.
Everything. The astral, the mental, the spiritual soul, all of it except the physical is present and magnetically attached, so to speak. Yes.
The fact that we're saying that life is a drama, a school, and a pilgrimage suggests that if we're going to speak about life in terms of spiritual knowledge, we have to approach it from the point of view of consciousness and not form.
Thank you.
Because forms may come and go, disappear and disintegrate, but the consciousness within them is always one, and therefore life, as one with that consciousness, always is. It never ceases to be.
Thank you. So right. So the forms come and go. The forms evolve according to what? You know, sometimes we talk about spiritual evolution and people falsely conclude, oh, spirit can evolve. No, spiritual evolution is the evolution of the vehicle in an ever broadening or deepening way to be a better vehicle so that spirit can more fully express itself through that vehicle, that spiritual evolution. Yes, in the brain.
And as such, theosophy teaches that the whole of the universe is alive.
Right.
There's nothing dead in the whole universe. So that means that the whole universe has its time to run the stage to evolve, to move, to become part of the pilgrim or a pilgrim from one point to another.
So the entire universe is one living entity or expression of life, yes?
So going back five or six steps, we forget the actual question.
Okay.
But the illusionary world is the playground, shall we say, of the lower four principles. But they are necessary so that the higher three has access to experience. So perhaps we can look at those vehicles of sensation being particularly suited to the illusionary part of our life, that those higher principles, as we activate them, as we use the mind in a higher way, we begin to go into that school period. And devoting the rest of our time, now that we've been awakened, honors the highest principles in our nature as we then walk as the pilgrim.
Thank you for the contribution. Yes.
The life that we are living right now is only the small life, or that microcosm of that greater life that we are living, which is many, many cycles and many, many times being reborn and so forth. So life is not simply the breath of life. It is, that's just the illusion. That's what animates the body, that life which this small life is living now. If we did not have that breath of life, this life would not be animated. It would not exist.
The form would not exist if we did not have that breath of life. But we would continue in a larger way. Thank you. Yes?
When we think about dramas in general, we tend to divide them into tragedies and comedies. But aside from the events themselves that seem to be tragic or comedic, doesn't really matter on what our attitude is to it, because we can take all experiences and either make them tragic to ourselves or be lighthearted and optimistic and hopeful about them.
Does our attitude toward the events in our lives matter in this pilgrimage? Any contributions? Yes.
I think perception can create a reality. I mean, perception is so extremely important. It's from the mind, and it's between the body and the soul. And it's kind of like an interlink between the world of form and the soul is perceiving the mind. And we can create a beautiful reality just by our thoughts. And maybe we can manifest positive situations, positive people, positive things in the material life. If we focus on that, and if we believe, in other words, that we can have this positive reality. And when negative things combine, sometimes we can do our best to make them into something more positive instead of.
Thank you. So
the so-called tragedy of it, maybe it's could be that was in a positive way.
So the contribution really has to do with, you know, we can choose, and our mind takes the form, it is said, of whatever the object is that we're dwelling upon, but we can choose what to dwell upon. And we can all understand what follows from that. Yes.
There's a quote. Everyone experiences pain, but not everyone suffers. And that seems to address the idea of attitude. We all experience pain, but if we make it a part of our resume and a part of our character and a part of our being, then we suffer.
Everyone experiences pain, but not everyone suffers. Thank you, and it all depends on the attitude that we take toward it. It's time for one last. Yes.
Then life is a stage.
Life is a what?
A stage.
Life is a stage.
That we could call it the theater of life, and that each one comes on stage and plays different parts. And it's like a pilgrimage from stagehand to principal part. So what it brings to mind is those Shakespearean dramas and the Olympian dramas. Of course, today in the Olympics, it's only all about sports. But at that time, various plays were given to dramatize for the masses of the people, what life means, what it is, and who are the players.
Thank you. And with that, we'll close the meeting. The meeting is adjourned.